Welcome. What's up, everybody? This is Steve Barton here, and thank you for tuning in. We are back with Justin Hune from the Uranium Insider. Justin, thanks for coming back on the show.
Happy to be back with you, Steve.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. If you guys are liking these videos, please hit the like and subscribe button. Hit the little bell notification icon so you'll be notified when we got a new episode. And Justin, it's been about a month or so. Let's just start off kind of macro. What is your big picture view of the broad market and the uranium market?
Well, I tend to focus obviously primarily on the uranium market. So my prognostications on the broad market are going to be relatively shallow, but I think just kind of a 30,000 foot view is basically the Fed's trying to stick to their guns with hiking rates. The market's essentially pricing in another 125 basis points by the end of the year, pricing in a 75 basis point hike, I believe, in a couple of weeks here. You know, at the current Fed funds rate now, we're already seeing some pretty substantial breakdown in foreign currencies. It's really keeping the dollar aloft. The dollar is pushing back up towards its highs of a couple of weeks back, 20-year highs a couple of weeks back, and that's really breaking down the Great British Pound, the Japanese yen. Just saw a tweet this morning about energy costs for Japan. How, you know, the Japan's oil export costs are up about 18% this year, but if you actually factor in the movement of the currency and they're buying oil in U.S. dollars, it's up 50% on the year. So just the pound, the yen, the Australian dollar, the Canadian dollar, I mean, there's serious turmoil in foreign currency markets, and it's all because of the rising dollar, because of the Fed funds rate. And so the Fed is already having to, and going to have to going forward, while they're claiming they're sticking to their guns with continuing to raise rates until they see inflation come down. The CPI came up today, basically in line with expectations, you know, 0.1% higher than the general consensus at 8.2%. The month over month, CPI came up hotter than expected. But they're going to have to balance that with this breakdown in foreign currencies. And obviously, you know, as well, the interest on the debt is huge. And, you know, you get to a too high of an interest rate, the interest on the debt really goes astronomical, and the Fed essentially is going to have to print money to pay the interest on the debt. So it turns into this vicious cycle. I really don't see how we get out of it. And I honestly don't expect inflation to fully come back down and stay down. I mean, the money supply, it's just a mess. It's a mess. They're in between a rock and a hard place, but there's a number of factors. We've got the midterm elections coming up in 3 weeks. We've got obviously just the turmoil and the recessionary markers that are coming from the rising rates, you know, dead stop in most real estate markets. Obviously, in certain places where there's high demand and people are showing up with cash, it hasn't really slowed things down that much. Where we are in Southern California, it's not as bad as some other markets that got really overheated, like Austin and Boise and things like that. You know, those markets are just screeching halt. And then obviously, you know, used car markets, things like that, they're just dead stop. So we got to see prices come down in all those markets. And that should bring inflation down, generally speaking, at least a little bit, enough for the Fed to go, okay, we can pause here. And I think that the market is waiting with bated breath for that moment. With all of that said, you know, the market gapped down, you know, S&P was down, what, 2.5% in the first 15 minutes of trading today.
That was impressive. NASDAQ was down, I think, 3.
Yeah. And looking right now, the S&P's up almost 2.5%. Huge swing today for the S&P. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like the short positions are so huge that as soon as there's some momentum short covering, it kind of has the snowball effect. So I'm a little bit cautious here seeing this because it doesn't make sense. And whenever something doesn't make sense, I kind of dig into why. But my general feeling is like money wants to be long here. And as soon as there's even the most mild excuse to be long, I think that we're going to see the markets move significantly. I don't know if this move follows through. I wouldn't be surprised to see more chop going into the election, unless and until we see some softening language coming from the Fed, which we very well could. I don't think a tanking stock market really helps the incumbent party during a midterm election. A very complex set of variables. But all of that said, I do believe that we're nearing a top in the dollar. And I think that when the dollar finally peaks and starts to reverse, probably in line with a pause and or pivot from the Fed, we're going to see precious metals absolutely rip. We're probably going to see commodities do very, very well. I'm not really a buyer of general equities here. You know, I'm not really a buyer of the S&P or buyer of the tech stocks. I'm very long energy. I'm long uranium, I'm long oil, I'm long gas, I'm long precious metals. That's pretty much my portfolio here, with a short on Apple and the S&P, which aren't looking too good right now. But luckily, I actually covered half of that position this morning. So we'll see. I'll probably re-enter it. If we get a good little counter trend bounce here, I might re-enter a short in the broad market just as a hedge, with very low confidence in which direction it goes. I like being able to print a little cash. If all of the stuff I'm holding for the long term that I'm just going to hold through the volatility goes down, might as well put some cash in my pocket. And if it goes against me, all right, I close out that put spread at a 50% loss and a 1% portfolio loss, and everything else in my portfolio is going up. So that's the risk I'm willing to take with that hedge. But you know, with all that said, I don't really know. I follow very intelligent macro guys that have that mostly are in line with what I just said, but there certainly are some very, very sharp macro guys that are pretty darn bearish here, that are not necessarily expecting, okay, the Fed is going to pause and Fed is going to pivot. Yes, that's true, but that doesn't mean that we go full risk on in the equities market. So I don't really know. All I really know is where I believe the uranium market is going. That's my highest confidence trade. Oil is pretty darn high confident as well. Precious metals is probably third in line there, but still pretty high. So yeah, the uranium market is really, really poised to run here. So that's pretty much what I focus on.
Yeah, the strong dollar has been very interesting, because I've been tracking it against gold against foreign currencies, and that's just climbing, whereas gold against the USD is just going down, and then just kind of sure. Hitting that little what was the last blip? I think it was 1640 or something like that. And then it shot back up to 1670.
Right.
The Japanese yen, I was talking with my girlfriend. I'm like, you know, now might not be a bad time to go on a vacation to Japan, because I think our dollar would go pretty far. And they just opened up the country. You know,
it's probably a great time to visit Japan, honestly. Yeah, it probably is. Yeah.
That's on your bucket list. You might want to do it soon.
It is. It actually is on my list.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, this is... It's been on my list for a few years, and they were one of the countries that just really closed from COVID, but they're starting to open back up. Although I talked to my buddy who's got a travel account service, and he was saying that they're having a lot of hard time with the hotels getting employees back to work. So,
oh, interesting.
You may end up paying for it that way. I'm not sure.
I'm looking at the yen USD chart here, the JPY USD. It's at 30-year lows right now.
What is it, 145 or something? That was
brutal. Let's see. Hold on. Oops. Yeah, no, it's I was looking at the relative chart. Let's see, JPY. No, I can't. I don't see the chart you're talking about. But yeah, either way, relative to the US dollar, 30-year lows. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk a bit about Cameco. I got a plethora of questions yesterday about Cameco. So a lot of my subscribers own Cameco either directly or indirectly through URNM or URA. For both the ETFs, Cameco is their biggest holding. URNM is about 16%. URA is almost 25%. So Cameco and Brookfield just acquired Westinghouse for almost $8 billion. Cameco is going to own 49%. Brookfield's going to own 51%. What happened here, and what does it mean?
So I think really just the broad picture of what happened with this transaction is Cameco is vertically integrating to another element of the fuel cycle is really what it's all about. So Westinghouse, through either actual reactor construction, the providing of components for nuclear reactors, or providing the nuclear fuel for said reactors, is has played a part in over half of the world's reactors. They have 9,000 employees. They have an immeasurable wealth of knowledge and intellectual capital. It's one of the biggest companies in the space, period. Okay, so one of the primary interests for Cameco has to do with their fuel fabrication. So Westinghouse, for example, is the only company besides Rosatom that is making the Russian style fuel rods for the Russian style nuclear reactors. And I believe there's around 30 of those in Eastern Europe and Finland that have been trying to get away from buying anything from Russia at this point. And Westinghouse has been able to make those. They're unique, uniquely shaped fuel rod, fuel assembly. And so, but Westinghouse is a huge, huge player. Now they got into trouble, have huge cost overruns with the Vogtle plant in Georgia. They essentially were filing for bankruptcy in 2017. They got purchased by Brookfield. And now one leg of Brookfield sold Westinghouse to Brookfield Renewable Partners that went in for this deal with Cameco. And so Cameco paid up $2.2 billion, and that was partially made up by a $650 million bought deal. So they raised $650 million through a share issuance bought deal at $21.95. And this was really the big shakeup, because the stock was trading at 25 something before that deal. It was like a 15% discount to the previously closing day's trading price. That's a big discount. That was difficult for the market to digest, and certainly put a stick into the spokes for the very, very short term. It's trading up decently today. Yesterday was by far the all-time highest trading volume for the stock, by far, greater than even the day Fukushima happened. And so there is a really big, I think what's happening here is a lot of turnover. I think some bigger players and some smarter money is positioning here, and retail is going, what the heck is going on with this deal? And why are my November call options down 50% today? So that was kind of the big turmoil yesterday. But I mentioned yesterday in my market update video for members of the newsletter is that I think this is a watershed event for the space. I think really going looking back a few years from now, this is going to be a notable moment in the uranium bull run. And it's a difficult transaction for retail to understand. Most of the analyst reports that I've seen so far are positive on the deal, with an exception of one that's been trying to break down the financials and what this means for cash flow, added cash flow for the company, because it's a big chunk. You know, I mean, they raised $650 million, but the remainder, $1.55 billion, is going to have to come from cash and debt. And so, you know, it's not a small amount of money. And Cameco obviously has a lot of cash, and they have a decent credit facility in addition to the shelf offering that they just put out a couple of weeks back. So now we know why. But either way, I think this is a huge signal for the market. And basically what Cameco is saying is, we believe in the future of nuclear, and we want to be vertically integrated. And they mentioned this in their last conference call, that they're looking at vertical integration. That should have been a clue across the fuel cycle. So they've got U308 mining through their Canadian operations, their Inkai JV in Kazakhstan. They've got idled stuff in Australia, in the United States. They have conversion at Port Hope, and they have or will potentially have enrichment through their share of GLA, which I'm almost positive they're going to take that majority share. I think they have the option to own up to 75 or 80% of Global Laser Enrichment. And then now with the Westinghouse acquisition, they have fuel fabrication. So they're setting themselves up as kind of the Rosatom of the West, or the 10X of the West. They're planting their flag on this bifurcated market. They're noticing, and I'm sure they're talking with utilities all the time, right? Not only for signing long-term contracts for U308 and conversion, but hearing the sentiment from Western utilities, which are 70% of the global uranium market, or global nuclear production market. So if they believe, which apparently they do, that the reactors and the utilities that operate in the West are going to remain against purchasing new contracts from Russia, then they are really planting their flag here and saying, we want you to come to us for everything. You can buy your uranium from us. You can buy your conversion from us. Eventually, we'll be able to enrich it for you too. But in the meantime, we'll work with Urenco, you know, down in New Mexico or in Europe or Orano in Europe for enrichment, and we'll make the fuel for you too. And so they're turning into a soup to nuts kind of one-stop shop for the whole fuel cycle. And that's where they're headed. And they're making a very, very bullish bet on the future of nuclear. And it's an extremely positive sign for the sector. It's a difficult to understand transaction for most investors and especially retail. But I think because Cameco doesn't get a lot of credit for their GLEO ownership for their Port Hope facility. You know, they're known as a uranium miner. And now this is kind of like, okay, yeah, we're actually a lot more than that. So it's definitely an exciting move in my opinion.
So this expanded their capability, from primarily mining, to now they can do conversion, enrichment. And yeah, I guess that is a giant bet towards the future of,
enrichment's not yet. So they have that minority ownership in Global Laser Enrichment that Silex is the majority owner for, but they have the right to increase that ownership. I believe it's to 75%. It might be 80%. I don't recall correctly exactly at the moment, but, they have a proposed operation at the Paducah like nuclear waste, facility in the United States where they will re-enrich tails from previous enrichment processes. It's a little bit controversial because, it's an extremely efficient form of enrichment. And, you know, gun to my head, it's probably the future of enrichment. You know, we're talking, you know, 2030s, 2040s and beyond. But I think that the DOE and the United States, generally speaking, is very, very cautious about implementing this facility because all it takes is that engineering and that technology to get out into the wrong hands, and you have a very easy way to enrich up to nuclear weapons grade via laser enrichment. But with that said, the fact that Cameco is there and they have a stake in this technology and this move into fabricated fuel with Westinghouse and nuclear in general, nuclear components manufacturing for reactors, I think that is also a vouch for GLE as well. So they'll have some stake in enrichment at some point, but right now they have every other element of the fuel cycle covered besides that enrichment.
Okay. What did you mean by the 30 reactors over in on the other side that they specifically make for those fuel rods for those reactors? They now have that market as well? Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily, but there's a Russian reactor design, and off the top of my head, it's somewhere around 30 reactors in the West, like outside of Russia, essentially, in Eastern Europe, that are this design that Rosatom built, and they have a different style of fuel rod that up until recently, only Rosatom was able to manufacture these fuel rods that go into the reactors, because the fuel rods are specific to each individual reactor, not only the level of enrichment, but the style and the size and the shape of the actual fuel assembly. But Westinghouse, a number of years ago, was able to make that style of fuel rod and can do so going forward. So going forward in an ideal situation, these Russian style reactors that are operating outside of Russia that don't want to buy fuel assemblies from Russia can go to Westinghouse.
Okay. Yeah. Cause each one of them, one may be a cylindrical one. The other one may be a hexagon shape.
Exactly. No, it's like a star shaped, rod. Yeah.
Okay.
Fuel assembly. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they sold 650 mil, worth of their shares. And they did it at almost $22 when it was selling previously at $25. So that just what's their total share amount? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean Cameco was over $30 a month ago. So to do the raise at $21.95 was a pretty big hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, what was your question? I missed it. I apologize.
Oh, if they sold 650 million shares, what's their total share count? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up really quick.
All right. Who'd they sell it to? Like Goldman Sachs or?
I don't think they've disclosed who took up the bot deal. I don't think they've disclosed that yet.
Okay. But this basic bet is to create other avenues of cash flow in the future.
Yes, exactly. Other areas of cash flow and to capture even more of the fuel cycle for their clients. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. All right. Got a question. Oh, one other thing. What's the deal with the 49 and 51 percent?
49, 51%. So Brookfield will still be majority owner of Westinghouse.
They didn't want to give up
Apparently not. No.
that.
No, there was, so Westinghouse underwent a huge, huge positive reversal when Brookfield bought them out of bankruptcy. So they've really engaged in a pretty phenomenal turnaround for the company. So I think that Brookfield, not only did they book a few billion dollars in profit on this sale to themselves, essentially, but they clearly see further value going forward. So I wanted to maintain that majority share. I apologize. The purchasers of the bought deal was disclosed. Let's see. Led by CIBC Capital and Goldman Sachs.
Okay.
You were right.
All right. Well, good guess.
So, I mean, that's another sign, or what I would call a tell, is seeing some big players drop some serious coin into the uranium space. So interesting. Yeah.
Okay, got a question here from Matt. He says, Justin, I'm new to the uranium space. I have 7,000 that I have to put into my Roth IRA before the end of the year. So Matt must be 50 or older. If you had to pick from these five investments, URNM, URA, Cameco, Kazatomprom, and cash, what dollar amount would you put into each one? Maybe we can do percentages because 7 grand will be kind of confusing.
Well, I don't think it would necessarily make sense to own both URA and URNM. So I would probably choose one or the other. URA has better liquidity. URNM has more upside potential because it's 100% allocated to pure play uranium miners. So of the two ETFs, it depends on how much you're putting in. So if you're talking about putting in $25 million, I'd probably go URA just to have the liquidity. Talking about putting in $500,000, I'd probably go URNM just because it has better upside potential. Cameco, I mean, you've got, like, let's see, from the highs, what are we looking at? From 5 weeks ago, we've got a, let's look at the sale right now here. 30% discount sale right now in Cameco from the prices of 5 weeks ago. So I think right now is a phenomenal entry. I think Cameco is a great mid to long-term hold. It's large cap, liquidity is good. And we just gave you some insight into where they're headed as a company and where they believe the nuclear world and the fuel cycle are going based on this acquisition. So I think that's a good one too. Kazatomprom, clearly the value play in the space. I think that they're doing pretty much as good a job as anyone could in the position that they're in trying to maintain their distance from Russia and their attractiveness to Western customers, while at the same time not getting themselves into hot water with their neighbor that supported them in January with unrest, that they have a mutual understanding of support prior to this current situation. But there is some hair on that story. So,
Yeah, there's that's probably the biggest risk, huh?
yeah, definitely. So there's some geopolitical risk there, but if you're looking only at, let's say, valuation relative to their cash flow, if you're doing forward cash flow analysis of any company in the space, because Kazatomprom is the screaming buy, especially if you're betting on higher uranium prices. But there's geopolitical risk. And then Sput, I mean, Sput's probably, if you're an older person and you are looking at retirement in the next, number of years, and you want a safe bet, Sput is highly liquid and you're betting on the commodity. You take no individual miner risk. That's probably the safest. So I'm going to assume, because you're talking Roth IRA, that you're probably not looking for extreme risk here. So if I were in your position, and this is not advice, I would probably split it between URA or URNM, Cameco, and Sput, and probably chop that into thirds.
Okay. Any cash position?
Sure. Why not? Chop it into fourths.
Okay.
25% cash. I mean, if we go through some kind of steep washout, there might be opportunities in other areas besides uranium, you know. I mean, if the dollar goes up on stilts, you might want to pile a quarter of that into some precious metals, you know, some type of play in precious metals. I personally like long-term vertical call spreads. That's my biggest precious metals positions is SLV 2024. I mean, that's not that long-term, but, you know, vertical call spread for leverage. And I know my risk going in, but there's plenty of plays in that space you could do as well. So, but at the same time, you know, we're talking, you know, I mean, with CPI at 8.2%, I think the real world inflation is considerably higher than that. So sitting on a lot of cash doesn't make sense, but I think no matter what, in this type of volatile world that we're in, having some cash is pretty essential.
Yeah, the last I checked on John Williams at Shadow Stats, it's north of 16. So I think the quick, easy math is whatever they're reporting, essentially double it.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. You, how's your new, format going? I've noticed, you're doing one episode a week now on, Uranium Market Minute.
Doing one a week, free for Uranium Market Minute. That's going out on YouTube and podcast channels. So that I've only done one since I switched the format. I'm going to do another one today. But I've been doing daily market updates for members of Uranium Insider. That's been going very, very well with really, really good feedback. So I'm very pleased to see that. Yeah, it's I'm enjoying it because I can get into the weeds a little bit more and share kind of some detail that I hadn't been sharing publicly for free. And it also feels good just to give a little bit more back to, you know, the people that have been supporting us. So that's been going really well. Yeah, very much enjoying it.
Good. Yeah, I've noticed you've popped up on other outlets doing more interviews and stuff. And it, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Love your content, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. For the listener, if you'd like me to look over your Roth IRA or your 401k or other brokerage account, I'll do a free consultation. Contact me at stevebartonmoney.com. Check out Justin's website, uraniuminsider.com. Go to his YouTube channel, Uranium Market Minute. And Justin, thanks again for coming on the show, and we will talk to you next time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Steve.